August 10th, 2022, it's the Watt from Pedro Show.
Thank you.
Wofford Pedro Show. Naima, huh? John Coltrane at the Village Vanguard again is the title, because it's 1966. Our guest, Chicago, right?
Chicago, indeed. Yeah, through and through.
Where I was conceived.
Come on.
Born in Virginia, but conceived in Chicago. Yeah, Nick, welcome aboard.
Thank you so much.
And who's the, who was our connect?
Probably Steve at Cuneiform, right?
That's right. Steve at Cuneiform.
Yeah.
That old way of writing.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, he's a great cat, man. He is really a great cat. And so we've got to give him credit. So let's try to go back as far as we can go back. Well, Brother Matt, how are you doing?
Everything is good.
Okay. Please, Nick, your earliest musical memory.
Oh, man. I guess there's sort of the regular mom playing Christmas carols and then harmonizing to the Beatles with my older sister. But after those two things, I think, like, probably getting deep into a neighbor's record collection at a very young age, like probably around 6 or 7, going over to an older kid's bedroom to listen to his record collection. That's probably, like, the most formative situation was kind of being an early adapter of a long playing vinyl records at maybe too young of an age.
Can you remember his name?
I can. His name was Paul Diekman.
Okay. Thank you, Paul.
He also had a wicked beer can collection, if you recall the beer can collection craze in the 1970s.
Yeah, I'm guilty.
I remember people having stuff like that going on.
Yeah.
Because you need something for all the dust to cling to.
That's right. He also had some secret beer cans where he would hide some illicit substances, which I only knew what they were later on in life. But thankfully at the time, I did not.
Oh, yeah, there's like fake ones, false bodies.
Exactly.
What about, Pad, you grew up in, as far as musical instruments? Was there any in the pad?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, my mom played the piano. So there was a piano hanging around, and that was really the first.
Did you jump on that?
Yeah, I jumped on it around, I would say maybe forced to jump on it.
Oh, did you go through the piano lesson thing?
I made it 6 months, Watt.
And what was the experience? Yeah, Brother Matt, we've had many guests on, and some of them, it almost drove them away from music. It was a great thing, but that was kind of the minority.
Yeah, it got close, man, but, like, no, I played for 6 months, and it turned me off, but I'd say it actually maybe turned me deeper towards the record collection situation, you know, kind of like just mining for gold on my own.
So do you think it was the idea of lessons or the teacher themselves?
I think it was I'm not going to name names, but I think it was the teacher.
They weren't really happening with, right?
I think they have the
skills.
I got to give them credit, though. Like, it may have also been, you know, me just being too young to, and maybe not ready to receive it, because I did eventually get into, like, in fifth grade, I joined the public school.
Well, I was going to ask you about school. Were you in the fucking, you know, choir or the marching band or shit like that?
I did play alto sax in the school jazz band and the school symphonic band and stuff like that. I did that through all the way from fifth grade through high school.
Okay, but it wasn't. That's after the piano thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so the piano thing was a bummer. What other instruments were in the pad?
Man, just the piano and, just, you know, probably like...
Because I'm wondering how you got on the fucking bass.
Oh, man, I will be happy to tell you.
Enlighten us, please.
I'm quite a bass creation myth.
Bring it.
My band director, I will name him because he's changed my life. His name was Robert Hirons, Bob Hirons. He taught me how to play the saxophone, and I was in the band under his baton from fifth grade. Under his tutelage, exactly, from fifth grade to eighth grade. But, you know, I was doing well, and I dug it, but he also had a bass in the band room, and on weekends, he would let me take it home on the school bus. just encouraging me just because I was sparking to it. You know, he was like, okay, well, you can't play bass in the symphonic, but you can't play electric bass in the symphonic band, of course, but you're welcome to take it home because you're interested in it.
Was there a stand-up player?
No, there wasn't. There was only
electric bass in the band room.
Yeah, just sitting there. And I asked about it, and he's like, well,
yeah,
if you want to take it home, take it home. So
it was like calling your name.
It really was. And you know what's funny, man? It was.
Well, what about an amp?
Well, he let me carry the amp home, too. So,
oh, so there was an amp there, too.
You got a picture of a 12-year-old carrying a 115 amp and a Gibson fretless Ripper.
Oh, I remember Rippers. They had big bodies.
Yeah, big bodies, tobacco sunburst, no fret lines.
You know who played Ripper? Was Rick Danko.
Oh, man. My favorite Ukrainian-Canadian bass player.
Yeah, I said Canadian first, but then Ukrainian, right?
Yes, Canadian-Ukrainian.
Yeah, only Levon was from here.
That's right. Yeah.
So, the trippy voice, too. All of them. Richard Manuel. God damn, what a voice that cat had.
Oh, his was the most heartbreaking of them all, I thought.
Well, his story, but... Yeah. His story's very sad.
Yeah, absolutely.
What was it called? Grand Mariner? That orange liqueur. That's what he drank.
Grand Marnier.
That's it.
That's Bo Diddley's favorite drink.
It's fucking foul ass. Anyway, he drank a bunch of that shit and hung himself in Florida. It was terrible.
Oh, man.
But he did have a trippy voice. So did Rick Danko. They both did.
Absolutely.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So you're taking this bass home and it ain't got frets.
I didn't know how to tune it, man. I didn't know nothing about it. I just took it home and it spoke to me. That means you
know everything about it. You just double negative right there.
Yeah, well... strike that and reverse it.
What was his name? Bob Height?
Bob Hires.
Hires, yeah. He would have been very upset with you.
Yeah.
Anyway, maybe he wanted you to search. Because he probably fucking... Those kind of teachers probably know how to play a little bit of every instrument, right?
Right.
Yeah.
He did.
I remember Mr. Luna at Dodson. In fact, after 10 weeks, he told me to quit. I was on the clarinet and said, Mr. Watt, I know you try hard, but why don't you do yourself a favor, do me a favor? And they looked at the class and said, it was all a favor.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Luckily, D. Boone said, his mom wanted me to be in a band with D. Boone, but no more school thing. Okay, so what do you do when you get this thing home?
Man, I got it home and
did you put your hands on her? Did you try to fit it up your ass? I mean, what's that?
it fit up there quite nicely. I don't know, man. I just started playing along. I tried playing along
because that's why records. Leo called his Fender precision. No, it's truth.
Come on.
He called it that because it had frets. Now. There was mandolin orchestras, and mandolins always had frets, so he didn't really invent it. But most basses were like giant violins.
Right.
And they did that in orchestras and symphonies and stuff because of the timbre, right? All notes ain't created equal.
Yeah.
But you're kind of like at the same shape and you just scale up and down, it'll be a lot closer. So that's what they were like with giant violins without the chin part. So he puts frets on his because, now he only played saxophone and a little piano, but he had buddies and they toured, most of them country west. And in those days, no boats yet, no vans, it was station wagons. So you'd have to tie the doghouse on the top of the roof. Yeah. There's a funny story about what's his name? That guy, he didn't play for like 30 years and went back. He took his bass across country, and by the time he got it to L.A., it was like hardly anything left. All the wind blew all the shit off.
You talking about Henry Grimes?
Yeah. Nels helped this guy, Nels Klein.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. He played with Albert Eiler and stuff.
He was super bad, man. He played that green upright.
You know what I'm talking about then? Okay.
Yeah, Henry Grimes.
Henry Grimes. Yeah, he was he quit music for 30, 40 years.
Right.
But when he came west, he brought that bass tied to a car, and it was... anyway, that was Leo's idea to make... He thought by scaling up his... Well, it was not a Telecaster then, it was a broadcaster, but Gretsch threatened to sue him because he had a drum set called that. So, no caster, right? And he just thought, if I steroid this thing up and I put some felt mutes and stuff like that, it can fake a stand-up. He didn't know, because James Jamerson would later do with this machine.
Right.
Was invent his own thing. He thought it was some kind of like half-ass at not having to carry a big doghouse around. Okay, so... Did you find books?
No, I kind of just listened to records and sort of found notes.
Okay.
And then eventually, like, I'm talking like probably a couple years later, I finally figured out how to tune it. It was a very gradual process.
See, that's different than all the rest.
Exactly.
The ones that look like the violin.
Right.
They're all tuned in fifths, including the cello, which can go as low as the bass.
Yeah.
It's so trippy about Ron Carter on a piccolo bass because it's Pertney or fucking cello, but big difference. Fourths and fifths. Your notes are clustered closer, not as much drama between the strings. Well, I want to play some more music.
Yeah, go for it.
Thank you. your bedtime song? so complicated. Don't want me, just need me. Don't be so complicated. Thank you.
ain't it?
Yes,
now,
sir.
It's trippy. The mandolin is tuned like the violin.
Yeah. And
backwards, right? G, D, A, E.
A, E, yep.
Right, because tuned in fifths and stuff like that. So you first found out what all the strings were, E, A, D, G.
Yep.
And then you found, right, there's fourth interval, you move to the next string. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you just did that on your own.
I just kind of started listening and talk. You know, I would go to music stores and, like, talk with people. And it was kind of, you know, old school apprenticeship in a way. Just started. I always kind of started playing with people who were a little older and a little better. And I always had to run to keep up. So it got me into shape
quicker.
That's
smart. I mean, people are all full of themselves. They'll put lamer people around them so they look good. That's like a Don Trump move.
I was trying to look bad.
Good for that asshole.
That's right.
Well, what about, I'm not talking after school like graduating, but in the afternoon, did you get into the garage band, basement band, bedroom
yes.
band thing?
All of those.
Okay.
Garage, basement,
okay,
bedroom.
So there's dudes there, right? And did you use this fretless bass with them?
Initially, I did, and then I mowed a bunch of lawns my eighth grade summer, and I bought a Hondo Black Precision copy from the Guitar Center on 95th Street in Chicago.
Okay, you're out in the burbs. So Crane had a Hondo. Yeah. Put aluminum foil over the headstock. So, it must not be a Fender, right? But it's something, yeah. Okay.
It works.
And, yeah, you know, at the end of the day, that's what it's about, right? And so,
absolutely.
What were these bands like? Did you guys try to copy songs off records, or were you writing your own material?
We were doing both, man. We were mostly just playing copies. You know, this is like junior high, like 7th and 8th grade. Mostly playing, you know, like, Kinks tunes and just kind of like some classic rock stuff. And then eventually we tried writing some stuff, but it was pretty terrible.
Now, this sounds like it was one group. Did it have a name?
That group, what do we call ourselves? I think it was Common Law.
Common Law? Did Common Law ever do a gig?
Common Law, I think, played a garage and called it a gig.
Is that your first gig, Nick?
My first gig, I think, was the 8th grade school talent show.
Oh, it's a school thing. Okay.
Yeah.
Is it with Common Law?
It was with Common Law.
Because obviously, probably the school band did recitals and shit, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah.
But your first gig that wasn't school stuff was Common Law.
Yeah, just playing like a friend's garage. And then, you know, later in high school, I ended up playing.
Well, how was that
gig?
Was that gig a success?
I think it was. I think it was short-lived, for sure.
And was most of the material, was it your guys, or was it a combination of copies?
As I recall, I think we literally played probably three songs, and there were two original tunes and one cover of You Really Got Me.
Kinks.
Yeah.
Well, that, you know, I think Van Halen covered that song, too.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
So what about the first song you wrote? Did you write it on the bass?
I think I did. I often will write on the bass.
No, I'm talking about at the beginning.
At the beginning?
You know, people I don't know if you've read Charlie Mingus's Beneath the Underdog, but he always wrote on the piano.
Yeah.
Even a bass player. Won't write on the bass. When I give people songs, I don't know what your experience, but it's trippy. They won't call them songs. Oh, give me a bass line. No, this has got verse and chorus and bridge. And oh, no, it's a bass line. Yeah, all
right. Do you write on the bass?
Chico Hamilton, about 99%. Chico Hamilton couldn't get songwriting credits. Now, he was a drummer, man, but it's the same dilemma. Drummers and bass players not getting credit for writing songs.
Right. Well, Michael Henderson, rest in peace.
We just lost Mr. Michael Henderson.
Yeah. I think wasn't
well,
that
he
a
turned into
story?
Like a disco singer after the Miles Davis thing. But he is so great on those fusion albums because he don't play fusion.
Right.
I think he was
amazing.
Playing for Stevie Wonder, And Miles saw him at the Apollo, and he told Stevie, I'm going to take your bass player. And he did.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It's in the Quincy Troop book, right?
That's amazing, yeah.
So, first song you wrote it on the bass.
I think just like the initial like kind of riff was on the bass, yeah. It's undocumented, but I'm going deep into my mind's eye right now a lot trying to recall, but I believe it was on the Black Hondo precision copy.
You never spent time on the stand up.
No, I play stand up quite a bit these days.
Nowadays, but I'm talking. Yeah. We're talking. Formative years, Nick.
No, formative years, I was okay. Strictly pork chop, no doghouse.
Yeah, but trippy that you did start with a fretless, so that's kind of uncommon.
Yeah, well, it was the only thing.
Because that's going to be down the road for you with the stand-up, yeah.
Right, yeah. It definitely attuned my ears, I'd say.
Yeah. Whether
or not that was intentional.
No, it's like trombone or something. That's
yeah.
Kind of clever, too.
Yeah, it's a position instrument, right?
Right,
it's,
position it's, instrument.
Yeah.
And actually very beautiful. Shit, we're at the end of the first hour. August 10, 2022, edition of the Watt for Pedro Show. Brother Matt, guest big man Nick with the bass. Hold tight for hour two. August 10, 2022, it's the second hour of the Watt for Pedro Show.
Little girl come blow me away. I don't care much, I went anyway, just a dog. I'm goddamn rich and exploding. When I talk in the night, there's oil on my hands, what a dog. Fall dog is cruel and smart. Smart time breaks the heart. Fall dog bombs the moon. Devil in the marketplace, devil in your dream place. Fall dog comes the moon. What a dog. A wig and a day, just a dog. These blackest of hits that have no soul, no shape, no depth, no underground. Fall dog is cruel and smart. Smart time breaks the heart. Fall dog bombs the moon. Devil in the marketplace. A devil in the leading place. Fall dog bombs the moon. What a dog.
I want to thank the guys that made this all happen for me, my brothers in light, okay? Nobuyuki, Jun Kozo, Akinori. So we're going to do a Funanori song here.
Hot for Pedro show. Okay, Nick. So after that big garage gig, well, you're getting into high school now.
Yes.
And you still got the Hondo. But you're taking the Hondo to different places.
Yes. I was getting up to the north side for some gigs, some actual real gigs, like playing at the Cabaret Metro, as it was then known, now just known as Metro.
Cabaret Metro on Clark Street by Wrigley Field.
You got it. You've rocked it many times, I'm sure.
Well, Joe Shanahan, I think the only place I played in Chicago for maybe 10 years was there. There was something called the West End once I played, but the owner went off. I think he was on a three-day chocho binge and waving a gun around and shit. But I always worked for Joe Shanahan at the Metro, yeah.
Yeah.
Last time, I was back in April. I think I was at Empty Bottle for the first time.
Okay.
Yeah, nice people.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
Anyway, so you start playing, okay. And the bands are different, right?
Yeah, the bands are different. It's kind of more just, like, I would say rock.
Well, how did you find people there, Nick?
Just kind of like hanging out on 95th Street at the Guitar Center and hanging out at record stores and music stores and just kind of being like, who wants to play?
But they were at music stores and record stores, not clubs.
No, because I was still kind of a little kid in a lot of ways.
Okay, okay.
You know, I was 15 years old and coming up to the North Side playing gigs, but you know couldn't really like hang out in the clubs. And I had a fake ID to play these gigs in the first place. It was with older cats, so I was flying under the radar a little bit.
Uh-huh. And so none of these were your bands. You're like joining people's bands.
Yeah, kind of side mouse in it.
Yeah, side mouse. That there's nothing wrong with that. I think in the older days they called that apprenticeship.
Right, exactly. Right. Man. No,
in fact, we lost this kind of thing, you know? Yeah, because some people, old people are lame or young people are lame or no, get back and forth. Actually, I'm seeing less of that. For example, I took a drummer on tour 3 years ago that was 7 months short of 40 years younger than me. I went to high school with his father.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so maybe some of that's going away because that's kind of bullshit. It's a kind of a prejudice, I think. No one picks where you're born. Like Sly Stone said, it's not where you're from, it's where you're at.
Right.
Because you can't pick that where you're from part, but maybe you can have a say in where you're at.
That's true.
Wise man, Mr. Stone. Who's still with us. Unbelievable. All the cats are fucking dying of drogas and that cat.
He's
powering through. Like he was living he's like in a trailer home or something. Campers. Okay. So what about after school now? Graduate. Do you want to still keep going like music school?
No, I didn't go to music school at all.
But I'm thinking in your head, are you thinking music
school? No. I'm just thinking, like, I want to be in bands and
but you're not thinking I want to be a chemical engineer or a mechanical engineer or an urban planner. So you don't want to go to college for that stuff either. You just don't want to go to college.
No, I ended up going to college, all right, but not for any you know, not for music and not with any direct intention of gainful employment.
Like what? Holding pants? Or your parents want you to do it? Yeah.
I mean, in some ways, I guess I wanted to also, but I was kind of just going with the flow of the life
situation.
That's
what you do, right? It's almost a sleepwalk. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I wasn't.
I'm just curious.
That.
What's your like? The Queen guy ended up an astronomer, right?
Right.
Yeah. So, what would have been your other life?
I think my other life would have been like my old man, probably like an English teacher.
Teacher?
Nothing
wrong with teacher.
No.
Fucking Brother Matt.
Worked
teacher
for me.
Of the year many times.
Worked for me.
Incredible. Worked for fucking... Some cats, you know, terrible young lives, and they turned it around, and Brother Matt was part of that reason. Beautiful.
That is beautiful.
You fucking know it. I'm so fucking proud of you.
Thank you.
So you're doing the school of gigs.
Yeah.
That's what you're doing, right? You're learning by doing with music.
For sure.
Okay.
I mean, that's where I really met a lot of, you know, I started meeting heavier players who are kind of getting more into it in a deeper way that I wasn't feeling, you know, when I was in high school. Naturally, everyone was getting older, but, you know, kind of just spread my wings and met some heavier players.
Uh-huh. And, but still the side mouse, right? Or do you start making your own projects?
There was a little. I was still doing a lot of side mouse and stuff, even throughout the college era.
Okay.
It probably wasn't really until like.
You notice that a lot of bass players don't run bands.
Right.
I wonder why. Same with drummers.
Well, man,
we're like utility players, infielders in baseball.
It's true.
I mean, we're key, but not that key. Like,
you know. Yeah. Well, man, the record that Steve from Cuneiform sent you, that was like really my first record that was kind of under my name.
Yeah.
And that's coming much later in life.
But you know what? Maybe that ain't a bad thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Maybe things happen for a reason that way.
I think you're right.
Yeah. So, what about bass players' influence on you? Because probably, I'm guessing most of these units that you're in, you're the only bass player. But you're probably fucking learning. I mean, you're learning music, but learning bass. What bass players were you looking at or listening
back then? Yeah. Like in those formative years, the 17 to 21 era. I mean, I'd be lying if I didn't say you were on that list, fine sir. But Tracy Pugh for sure.
Oh, yeah. Did you see that info I gave to you?
I absolutely did.
Yeah, beautiful man. You know, he was going to get into literature. He was always a writer.
Right.
Yeah.
He had
epilepsy.
That.
You know, that was the problem. Epilepsy and maybe drinking and drogas don't go good with that. But he actually had a fit in the tub and beat his head so hard, that's what ended up killing him. So it really wasn't drogas and drinking. It was epilepsy. Yeah. But he was beautiful, and I got to see him play with the birthday party once up in Hollywood at the Roxy.
Tell me about that, man. How did that sound?
Well, the band was, I mean, they did Stooges loose.
Wow.
It was the drummer man was out. Phil, he had left, so Mick went to drums. So there are only four guys. They don't have two guitars. It's just Roland on guitar.
Oh, man.
And Tracy on the bass, and Nick singing. And Nick wasn't attacking anybody, but he was singing really intense, and his hair was giant like a lion, like a mane.
Yeah.
And it was at the Roxy, which is way wider than it is deep. So it's kind of a trippy thing. So he's roaming from side to side, really wide stage. And Tracy held his own, you know, he was stage starboard. And he had these bass riffs, right? That the song, he's birthday party songs, it sounded like they were a lot about being around the bass riff.
Yeah.
Roland played with a lot of fucking reverb, drenched with reverb, really trebly sound, like D-Boom with a lot of reverb.
Yeah, man.
Really skinny. His legs were like pipe cleaners. What do you call them things that you clean pipes out with?
Yeah, pipe cleaner.
Pipe cleaner. And Mick, you know, Mick looks like Mick does now, but just younger. So, and God, he was doing... he was Nick's main music man until that was too much for him, flying from Melbourne and stuff. So now it's Warren Ellis.
Right.
Paris, and, you know, Nick's in Brighton. And he does his music. In fact, Larry, the guy who did the last couple of years of Stooges with me, is doing their drums now. He was doing some keyboards, but their drummer man's sick. They've been losing people. Everybody's losing people. You know, that's one thing about getting less younger, Nick.
Yeah, right.
But that gig, that was an incredible gig on me. Yeah.
Tracy, well, those bass lines, man, like just that, like, you know, the Ostinato thing.
He played with the
like,
pick, yeah.
Yeah.
Ostinato's little fucking figures that were, and like, I think I told you, he was playing one of these 360s acoustic, some acoustic
yeah.
old-timey thing with the big sliders for an EQ section. They were all the way to the top, except the one next to the lowest one. That was all the way down.
Wow.
So it was this kind of really, yeah, deep thing without a big, a low mid, you know, so it wasn't Bogart in that way, but it was a trippy sound. You know, one guy who kind of played with him, like him later on, was Mr. David Sims with
I was just thinking that, man.
And, Scratch Acid before that. Yeah, he's the guy who kind of took his sound, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
But this guy's own thing, and he's beautiful, too. It's time for Brother Matt and his spin cycle.
Hey, man, it's Christmas already.
I know. I can't even think about that, man.
Oh, my head.
I tell you something. Man, it's tough. And it's cruel.
That's, you know,
one day you wake up and you decide you want to be somebody.
Crudo for the menudo.
You tell yourself, man, you got to do something. You go, okay, do something. And you go out there and try to do something.
I can't imagine.
And why did I have to wake up and want to be somebody?
These things happen at night.
I don't know, you know. The way you start, you know, you try to be a nice guy and pick your friends, and you hope that they're
going to
be
your
nice
amigos
guys.
Are. No more
you find
amigos.
Out along the way. Some of those guys aren't as nice as you thought. Maybe you should never even have
gone
the nice route anyways.
I feel like fighting.
Cut throat. That's what you got to do. You got to cut the throat.
Where's my
battleground is
where's
out
my,
here now.
Where's my peace?
And everybody knows it, and it's just scaring them. There's not that much time left.
No me quieres pedo.
How come I had to wake up and want to be somebody?
No me gusta.
What have I seen? I like your way, Catullus, talking about the whore who claims you owe her money, or that guy who smiled too much, must have cleaned his teeth with piss, or how about the poets come with their blameless, tame verse, or about how this guy married a slut. You come right out and say things. You're not like the others. But listen, Catullus, didn't I see you at the racetrack bar last Thursday? You had this great whale of a cunt with you. Must have scaled 190. One breast flopped loose, dressed in a lavender sheet. I believe I heard her pass wind in public. Her teeth green, her buttocks of sagging celluloid. And you drunk and pawing into her anus. Surely that was not you, Catullus, at the racetrack bar last Thursday.
Friends. She used to be called Rainbow. Now she's called Slut. Whore. She used to smile and take acid. Now she frowns and shoots downtown and whatever else she can score. She used to believe in miracles and casually walk through a world of stars. Now she sucks pussy and cock for $10 a shot in back seats of passing cars. She used to have long hair. Now it's bleached to shit, hacked viciously short and uneven. She used to have rock and roll, but now all she hears are grunts and groans and the sting of slamming steel cell doors. She used to have days of endless tomorrows. She used to have a lifetime of dreams come true. She used to run free in a world without end. She used to have everyone as her special friend. She used to march herself without hesitation, condition, or restriction. She used to have love. She used to so much. But now she washes dirty nylons and filthy sinks and crawls and takes it up her ass, sometimes for $20 in cold cash, and calls me long distance in the middles of nights and tries to convince me that this is what friends are really for.
They came knocking on my door at 7 a.m. They had a warrant out for my arrest. What's your name? Where's your identification? I was half naked, so they didn't come inside. Figuring they'd caught me in mid-fuck, they were right. Coitus Interruptus LAPD is a drag. I showed them alias number 3. They said, oh, well, where is she? I said, man, she was staying here, but she hooked up with some nigga and split. Okay, okay. And they left. I went back into the bedroom. You were naked and still hungry, curious. What was that all about? Nothing, I laughed. Took off the rag I was wearing, eased into the sheets next to you. We started fucking again, but things had changed.
Baby, when I look in your eyes, I see something special there. Something stronger than the physical thing that we've just shared. Something special. Something spiritual. It's the way we both
hate, kill, destroy. Hate, kill, 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 kill. We don't care. We just don't care. We don't give a fuck. I can see a future now for us. Before I didn't. I didn't have any faith in life, and now I do. Because of you and this thing we share. I can see the kids down the street breaking the neighbor's windows. The dog shitting on the neighbor's front lawn. You'll have the joint rolled and the beer open and the TV will be on when I get home. And we'll make it work the way we both
hate, kill, destroy. Hate, kill, destroy.
We just don't care. We really don't care. That's what the beauty of it is. We don't give a
fuck.
The later years scare most of our friends. Because the things that they have, they know, will go by the wayside. But with you and this thing we share, I'm sure about the future. About eternity, because the place of the spirit is in eternity, and what we share is spiritual. We both
hate, kill, destroy.
That Day Comes When is the title. Inspired by many binges. That day comes when all that bangs into what's supposed to be a fertile mind are all the drunken, stupid ideas and actions. Now you're going to black out more and more until you forget all the great, brave, and daring adventures. You won't break that thick black chain of cigarettes and booze without howling and hacking to new friends lost in the morning. Darkness covers him at daybreak, and it hurts more than a little while. This world can only last indoors with soft voices. Her love's, her sweet love, red and pure, never made him more than a man. It never cured thousands of miles between his heart and his eyes. One, two, three, four skinny, ragged trees ruin the flat landscape. It only takes two police to force his head to bend in prayer to the state and its goodness. The pavement soaks up round teardrops as they fall and flatten out.
Blacks. The blacks are sleek in the western sun, shining like night statues against a 25-cent sign. They get off on you. Bring me back my coffee from the Highland Inferno. The blacks snap their patent leather boots in anticipation. They love it when you come around. They get off on you. And you get them off. In the alleys, the toilets, the back rooms. They want you. They need you. They are immortal, immaculate, perfect in the western sun. And they live forever. And they get off on you.
My vision of Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali started punk rock. His political statement, would not fight for U.S. because of religious beliefs, lost the champ title, fought his way to fame and fortune like Eugene in The Decline, found something he was good at. Now he can be seen at skate gigs. Ambition, to be one of the big boys.
Motorcade on Lancashire. Who's behind the wheel? McCready Coos Jeff. Man, who's fucking unreal? I seen all this heat on the motorcycle. Said, hey, Dad, who's that? He said, it's only the guy that's gonna send us to our base. McCready Coos Jeff. They wouldn't let you in the Disneyland. They wouldn't let you by our head. They really wish you were dead. When you beat on your shoe, beat with this tape on the shoe. You better put, you know what I'm talking about. At Fat Boy Burgers, I was just eating a cheeseburger. Maybe I think it was maybe a bacon sandwich. Well, I seen a big motorcade and a big limousine. Nikita Khrushchev was in North Hollywood back in 1959. We will bury you. That was his famous craze. Every man, woman, and child will die in his hand. Nikita Khrushchev.
But as it turned out later, he was really like a nice guy, and he was an artist, and he was actually ostracized by the Soviet Party for his relations with America were too warm and friendly. But boy, he really was scary.
I kneel before Santa Monica, open her cunt, La Cienega, 8 miles inland. Her immaculate legs lift, lovely, the rolling hills, and the private thigh of Malibu.
Cocktail, picked by a Mexican, washed by an Indian, delivered by a black, marketed by a Jew, eaten by a wasp.
This might be an incidental music piece. 7 poets chosen by John Ashbery, dedicated to Tim Dugos. We are taking the obvious drugs. We are stoning the oblivious adulterer. We are sleeping with adults at last. We are last in line for the teardrop explodes. We are exploring vast nearby planets. Our plants are wilting while we're on vacation. We are vacating our new poems of meaning. We are mean to the people we live with. We are live on talk radio. We are living on top of radiation. We radiate good health on the West Coast. We coast on poems we wrote eons ago. We will never let Ian Young sleep with us. We sleep where danger is least apparent. We are parents to poets who write like us. We are more right-wing at the present. We are less right-wing than our president. We write poems that sound like they're winging it. It is quite interesting what we are doing. We are the nice people cops are arresting. We cop a few hours and think we look rested. We are not what our horoscopes printed. We have a Hockney print in our vicinity. In this city, that's pretty Hackney. But if we could hack it, we'd buy a Wingfield. We are the sickos beneath Tom Clark's hatchet. We'd like to clock our time in his presence. We are giving this present to beautiful people. We are the dutiful people you see here. We deal drugs at the foot of the suitable steeple. We wear these suits for an obvious purpose. We'll tote our purses into oblivion. We purse our lips to indicate our totalitarianism. We were totally flipped out on acid. The source of our flippancy is chemical. We slept in the doorway to the polemical. We kneel on the floor near the collectible. We place tape on the mouths of the kneeling. We write a play on words rocketing outward. We play good quality punk rock from England. We were a rock, now we're an island.
I don't sweat. He comes home each night and pours a drink and rests his head in his hand and watches TV. He's tired. He's led a hard life. A child of the Depression, a young man of the World War, an old man of work. He works hard. He sweats. He's done it all his life. He doesn't like me. I don't sweat. He seems to understand why I don't sweat. He won't tell me. I don't understand. I've tried to sweat. I've worked in a factory, read books, traveled, jacked off, made love, but still no sweat. He's seen everything, he tells me. He says everything is bullshit. He can say it, he sweats. He can say anything, he sweats. I can't say nothing, I don't sweat.
Heartbeats in Westwood. Heartbeats. Of tiny little miniskirts, but not too tiny, oozing with sex, kind of. I know, because I was there. I can tell you the truth of long, hot summer nights spent walking up and down Broxton, looking for action, hanging out in front of Taco Bell. My girlfriend dumped a Coca-Cola over my head because she got mad. The whole street applied. I felt angry. I heard heartbeats in Westwood. Every weekend, walking through the patio, getting to know the vendors. I like this guy who sold crystal necklaces. I told him I was 16, but I was only 14. He said he was 19. He was so old. We went out once. He said I was inexperienced. I felt angry. I heard heartbeats in Westwood. One night in front of the Bruin Theater, a guy drove up in a silver Corvette. He said something to me. I went over and looked in the car. He didn't have any pants on. He wanted me to touch his heartbeats in Westwood. Pounding the pavement, the mean streets beckoning with promises of so much. But only delivering Jews for Jesus, the Hare Krishna dancing in front of Bank of America. And always the music, 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 the music.
Feel no way, see if I feel quiet, for rolling on.
Brother Matt, what made you do what you did to us with your spin cycle this time?
Technical difficulties were the main theme of that one. We're down to one input.
So a huge tribute to Mr. Kubernick.
Harvey Kubernick there, Harvey going back to 1983 with English as a second language. That was a good chunk of side one there.
Yeah, double album, people.
Yeah.
All spiel.
All of that. So.
And thanks for bringing back those memories. I haven't heard that in a long time.
Yeah, a long time.
And people, vinyl. You heard some vinyl.
Vinyl skippage.
Feel our digital lips. Delivery system.
Yeah, 40-year-old vinyl.
Yeah. Thank you so much, brother.
Certainly.
August 10th, 2022. It's the third hour of the Watford Pedro Show. We'll be right back.
Mama, 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 mama Thank you.
Watch for Pedro Show. Nick, tell us about UFOne.
UFOne, holy smokes. That's a group from a long time ago, but I thought you might want to hear it. It was with a good friend of mine, Ryan Rapsis. Him and myself, it was kind of like a solo thing for him for a while, and then I joined up and we did a duo thing. All instrumental stuff, kind of weird, quite varied sounds, drawing from all sorts of stuff. And then we eventually added a third guy and made a trio out of it with this guy, the Lonesome Organist.
Well, how did you meet him?
How did I meet him? I met him on kind of like the all ages punk DIY show scene.
Okay.
Like probably in the early mid 90s.
And how did you meet Steve?
Steve
Uniform.
He put out some of my music with a current band of mine, with a cello player called Fred Lombert Holm and a drummer, Charles Rumbach. We have a trio called Stirrup, and Steve Cuneiform put out a record, and then we kind of kept in touch, and then...
Yeah, but how did you guys meet him? Oh, was he the other guys in the band?
How did we meet with Steve?
Well, your connect was through the other guys, or...
Yeah, my connect was with Fred, the cello player.
Fred was friends with Steve, okay.
Yeah, initially, correct.
Because this recent album that you just put out...
Yeah.
That's how that connect happened.
Exactly, yeah. He had worked with the trio with Fred, and then...
And where did you record this record?
I recorded it. It's actually live, improvised, no edits, recording at Experimental Sound Studios here in Chicago.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, there's a series. It's like a live open session where people can come to the recording. It's called Option. It's a series that Ken Vandermark, the saxophone player from town, and this drummer called Tim Daisy, and a guitar player, Andrew Klinkman, they kind of curate this series and invite players to come do their thing. So I did it there. It was just an improvised thing.
And how did they find that space?
Well, Experimental Sound Studios has been around in Chicago for, I think, over 30 years at this point.
Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of like a non-profit arts organization.
Like late 80s?
Yeah, I think very, very late 80s. Founded by Lou Malazzi, who's still around.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a far out, kind of like a place where, kind of a hothouse for, left of center, free improvised.
What was this thing? A Chicago Art Ensemble, right?
Oh, man, yeah. The Art Ensemble of Chicago.
Yeah, that's it. That's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
Does it have anything to do with that?
Not necessarily.
It's that kind of spirit. Yeah.
Definitely that kind of spirit, I would say. The Art Ensemble of Chicago looms large over Chicago's left field experimental community.
Yeah, of course.
For sure.
And, for a number of years, Sun Ra lived in Chicago.
That's right. I think he actually took on the name Sun Ra when he was in Chicago, after he moved up from...
He was playing these weird kind of strip clubs and stuff. He was way into Fletcher Henderson. I read the Tom Swede book, Space is the Place.
Yes.
It's a really good book. And he came up from Birmingham, Alabama, and, was doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah, called Delisa.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah.
It shows a trippy trajectory. What about the Tortoise guys? Do you ever, a lot of them live in SoCal now.
Yeah, no, I know those fellows for sure.
Jeff Parker lives out here.
Yeah, Parker lives out there.
He was doing DJ. I was helping the Flipper guys Saturday. Johnny Herndon.
Yeah, Herndon's out there.
Johnny Machine, right?
And then
John McIntyre just moved. I think he's in Portland, Oregon now, though.
Yep. He actually mixed that record that Cuneiform put out.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And then Doug and Doug and Dan are still in Chicago.
Yeah, and I saw Doug, he's still got that 11 Daydream, whatever it is. I saw him a couple months ago. I was playing in Western Massachusetts, and he was there.
Oh, nice.
I think he's the only guy. that left in the bandage. Bundy? Brown?
Bundy? Yeah, Bundy.
He's in Louisville.
I believe that's correct. Yeah, he hasn't been in Chicago in a long time.
Yeah, right.
But Bitney's still in Chicago.
That's right, that's right. So there's two of them. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, look, let's play some more music.
you want to play for that clue first?
Oh, how about I Want a Girl?
Oh, that's nothing.
Well, what do you say?
What's your party? Go on, pick a good one.
Back of the yard. We know that.
Back of the yard. Back of the yard. In old Chicago town. Where each fellow and gal is a regular pal. They never turn you down.
Take it, Wynn.
Where an ace is an ace, any time, any place, they'll give you their kind regards. And I feel mighty proud, and I'll shout right out loud that I'm from back home.
You ask questions.
Yeah.
My parents originated from Europe in a section what we might call, did they say, it used to be part Poland, part Austria, part Galicia. So I would say in the area of, let's say, Poland in general. And it's a Ukrainian type settling in Poland. And they're Ukrainian people, my people are.
How did they decide to relocate to Chicago?
That I couldn't tell you, but I would say for economics. In other words, get a job. Better to get a job here and make money because they hear it from their people that are here already. So that's when they make traction, try to get over here too.
What community did you live in, this specific community?
Community?
That you lived in?
In the area of 4400 Southwood Street. At that time, I was primarily inhabited by Polish and Lithuanian, some German. Early 30s, depression. It was so bad that, you know, young people like me, full of vinegar and vim, and couldn't even use the vinegar, the vigor that we had, because there's no work available.
Yeah.
It was just like a downtrodding total waste. It was so hard to get a job in those days. I even offered, you know, and I was only 17, 15, 17, and I was smoking golden green tobacco. They're 3 cents a bag. And the guy on the corner, he wouldn't let me wash his windows. He has five windows, big store windows. I was willing to do it for 3 cents.
Yeah.
Let me do it.
Really?
He'd rather do it himself. Well, that's how bad the things got. I only went about a year and a half to high school.
Into high school?
And I had nobody to boot me in the pants to push me, kind of bend me into it. So anyway, I went about a year and a half to high school, and that was about it. And since then, I've been bouncing around and got a job when I was 18 at the stockyards.
Yeah.
Am I going too fast? I got a job when I was 18 and a half, got a job in the stockyards. My first day at work, had a particular job going up. I was trucking, a hand truck, like on the docks, you know. Let me tell you, I come home, I didn't even eat supper, I went right to bed. I was just so dog tired. Salary was very good. In fact, amongst the highest salaries was for more, than what the general paid for, general level. Mine was higher and better. In other words, you guys are having a snack out, or you're making good money. I was lucky. I was making $18 to start off with, like $15, 30 cents an hour.
30 cents an hour?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I was making $40, about $15 a week. And then I got up to $18 a week, and then slowly progressed as the economy went. And finally, when I quit there, then I was in the $90 class.
Really?
I was at supervision. That was. I quit in 1946 in May. Went out of business for myself, as you know, this business now. Also, during that time, during my experience working with Smith & Company, I worked first as a laborer, as I told you, and then I was making a raw catalyst. Then I was in the second phase of it, baking the catalyst so as to be usable, and getting all, in other words, converting it into a usable stage that we could use it to make hydrogenation process of hardening the fats. Then I worked in the hard fat department, meaning where they had the converters, where they hardened the various oils and fats. And these, the way they do that, they have about 24,000 pounds of oil under a 400-degree temperature, and they suck in, they have vacuum pumps, they suck in the catalyst, and they pump hydrogen through it while this is being stirred and agitated. And that oil, which is originally oil, just becomes hardened. Depends how long you use that process. It gets as hard as a candle if you want it to.
Really?
Or it could be soft like buttery. You know, depends to what degree. But teeter, is the way we used to call it. Teeter is T-I-T-R-E. That's a chemical term. Laboratory term, I should say. And then from there, we had an explosion in the gas plant. That, of course, just to maintain employment, we were just sort of transferred all around through the old factories just to stay on the payroll.
Yeah.
And I still load hogs, carry them.
Carry the cattle?
Quarters, air, quarters, deep quarters.
Did you ever read The Jungle, or do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yes, I'm familiar, yeah.
Were the conditions like it was in the book?
I think my conditions were far better as compared to what they went through. No, the economy during the jungle time was conditions and the economy was worse. Much worse. During my time, in my sense, I couldn't compare it except by the book, but I would say ours was a breeze. They had a beginning of union, then had a choice of a company union or an outside union. They had a choice. But most of the employees seemed to take to the company union, and little by little later, it went the other way. Yeah, that, but it was a company union. What employees, you know, run it themselves. It was a company parented. And they had their own stewards and all that, grievance committees and all that. Same way here, then. The only thing, it wasn't on the outside. It was inside. And it was handled very good, I'd say, for quite a while. Except when the other element, the outside union element, and took over. See, I got my job in 1934 in October.
Okay.
And that was during the Depression, but fortunately, I got a recommendation from my priest from my church to the employment manager over there, and seemed to do some good. Well, you can tell them a few things.
Oh, what should I tell them?
But you're...
Tell you about the Aragon ballroom.
Oh, the Aragon. It was a beautiful ballroom. It was really pretty. The ceiling was just like clouds, and the clouds would move, and they had lights that were like stars, and they would twinkle. And they had around on the floor, on the edges, there was arches and booths in there where you could sit and talk and have a Coke or a beer. And they had nice music. And also at the Trianon, there was the Aragon was on the north side. The Trianon was on the south side. And they'd have all these big bands, Perry Como and Ted Williams. And you'd see all the, when these name stars would come up to sing, all the girls would come up to the stage and just swoon. Their mouths would open, and they'd be just looking at the stars, and there'd be Perry Como giving everybody a wink.
They'd be nice to hear my father talk, and they'd be nice to hear my mother talk later on. Oh, they were downtrodden spirits, you know, yes. But still, I think they would rather this country than any other.
Yeah.
Really.
Watford Pedro Show, Last Music, this edition. Nick, now you got this record behind us. What's coming up next? What you got now?
Coming up next is this trio record with I'm calling the group Ibises, and it's with actually
you like
with
that
Dan.
Bird with that beak?
Yeah, exactly.
I've seen those in New Zealand, man. They are trippy.
Yeah, they're a trippy bird, man.
Yeah. They walk very careful, and they get that beak.
So that's a trio with Bitney on drums.
Is that right? Okay.
Yeah.
What are you calling it?
Ibises.
Ibises.
Yeah.
Ibises. I've heard people call it Ibis. Yeah, with the I sounds short, I guess.
That could be. That's
but I might be wrong. Right. Don't listen to that. You guys, have you been playing?
We've been playing a little bit. I mean, it's an improvised trio, so we kind of aren't writing for it. We're just kind of letting it happen how it happens when we play.
But you said the record's coming out, so is it already recorded?
Yeah, it's already recorded, and I actually was just listening to the final master before I got on with you.
Did he put it out?
No, I think it's going to come out on American Dreams.
Okay.
It's labeled from Chicago.
And, improvises. Yeah, it's always new. It's always fresh.
Yeah.
Balls out. Now, one thing I ask people, you know, Nels Klein is probably my most known that I know of improvisers. He's a guy, man, you can write your whole album and don't show him any of it till the time when the record button's going to be hit. You know, that people like that first take sound? Well, fucking Nels can bring it. I mean, it's beautiful. But the one question I ask is, like, when you get more than one improviser together, who goes first?
I'm looking for your
answer, Nick.
More questions than answers. Man.
Because, you know, I asked also Nels this question besides that one. You know, what's the thing you're using? What skill are you using the most when it comes to improvising? And he told me it's listening.
Yeah, for sure, listening.
So if you're listening, that means you ain't really going first.
Right, and if everyone's listening, then who's going to start?
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
the chicken
and egg. Listeners.
That's like a Zen cone.
Right, it's a Cohen.
It is.
Yeah. So, but it is interesting about that. There are kind of rules, right? Or they can turn into terrible things, right? Like a beat-off session. Everybody beat off. Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah. It seems like there are some sort of informal, unspoken, unwritten rules of engagement.
What are ones that you come to live with that don't hurt your creativity?
That I've come to learn the hard way.
Of course. Learning by doing, like when you were a boy, right?
Yeah, no, that's the whole key to life, I think, is just doing it and getting a bunch of egg on your face, and then next time you get less egg on your face, hopefully.
Or like skateboard thing, right?
You
maybe fall off not as much.
Effort. Exactly, yeah.
Okay, so tell me some of your rules.
I think one of the main things that I learned early in situations like that is do not talk about it beforehand or afterhand. Like, you know, no, like don't think about what.
Yeah, when I did a couple gigs with Jandek, and he would not say anything about what we were going to do. And the drummer was a young man, and he was from his band Health, and he was shitting. Well, I was shitting peak analog too, but I knew that was a strategy. It was on purpose. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it kind of fouls it, right?
It fouls it a little bit, yeah. And, you know, I think initially when I started doing situations like this, you know, improvising, and I'm still like a novice, really, I feel, and learning a lot, but.
Well, that's beautiful.
You know, just like don't ask too many questions.
Okay.
Just start talking with
your bass.
Yeah. Exactly. And then also afterwards, don't deliberate after about what happened, because it already happened.
No debriefing?
No debriefing.
beautiful having you on the show, Nick, truly.
Oh, it's been a guest, man. You know? Thank you.
And when these new records come out, will you come back on the show? We could talk about them.
I would be happy to.
We don't
to,
have
man.
To go back to the old days. We could to be right here in the present.
That's beautiful.
Love you big time, Nick.
Man, thank you so much for
okay, keep on keeping on. We'll have
likewise.
You back on as soon as you want.
Sounds good.
Okay, people. August 10, 2022. This is Juan Pedro. So keep your powder dry.
Yeah.